Good evening, everyone, and welcome back to Megillus Rus. It's good to have you here. Last week, we completed the third peric of Megillus Rus. We finished the third chapter of Rus. And we covered a lot of ground. And we got to the point where essentially Rus and Naomi now exit stage left. And center stage now is Boaz. And Rus and Naomi have literally, from Perek 1, Aleph, Beis, and Gimel, have dominated the scene. And it's what they did to get to this stage that counted. The fourth Perek, certainly the beginning of the fourth Perek, essentially is only about Boaz and how he handled the situation from there on in. And eventually went on to marry Rus via Yibam, which we'll discuss. Now, because this is a block where lots going on all at one go, I'm going to take the psukim in rather large chunks, stopping only where I need to go to finish off all 22 psukim which are left. There's 22 verses left. Then we finished Rus, okay? And we're on the last Perek. What I'm going to do, Be'ez Hashem, now is take the first five as one block. So we usually, five psukim for us is probably 2 weeks worth of work. It's like 2 solid weeks worth of work usually. We're going to do five in a shot just to open the scene as to what's going on. So let's look together at chapter 4, verses 1 through 5. It's quite a bit of linguistic discussion that I want to get through to make sure that we understand exactly what's potting. And from there on in, we can get into some deeper ideas, okay? Is everybody sitting comfortably? Then we'll begin. It says, Uvoyaz ala hashar, and Boaz went up to the gate, the Yeshev Shom, and he sat down there. That's interesting. Do I need to know that? I don't need to know. Ovehineh, ooh, suddenly, as if by magic, Hagoil over. This, the Redeemer of whom Boaz had spoken of earlier, this Mr. Toiv, Elimelech's brother, just so happens to be walking by. That shows divine instigation. Notice how cool as a cucumber Boaz was about that. He didn't freak out and go, what? He just, oh yeah, oh, just a man. Just a man. Come over here. Come on in. This is miraculous. Nothing out of all the people that were walking through town on that day, at that moment, happened to be the one man who's the kingmaker in all of this. And that's Tithe. What are the, like, as if he hit it, oh, behold, wow, amazing. Incredible, right? And he said, Vayomer, very interesting. Surah, that's one word, which means kind of stop what you're doing and come over here. Shova po and sit down here. But shuva also, surah also means keep quiet. Sit down here quietly. Don't say anything. And he doesn't call him Boaz and Toiv are related. These are family members. They're both able to redeem Rus. And what does he call him? A.N. Other, Joe Bloggs, Ploiny Alimony, Mr. Sir, literally some bloke. You, hey, stop what you're doing. Come down, sit here, keep your mouth shut, Mr. A.N. Other. Now think about it, if you're Toiv, walking down the road with a bag of, I don't know, biscuits and a newspaper on your way through the market. Then the Av Sanhedrin, your distinguished member of your family, a nephew to you, calls the leader of Israel, calls you over tells you to sit down, say nothing, in front of the Sanhedrin. What kind of day is this? Think about it. Think about how this is. So, a bit shocked, Plony Abloni went over and sat down. He was like, okay, so I'll sit down. Bavakasha, you know, if that's what you want. Verse 2. He took 10 men from the elders of the town and said, sit here, and they sat. Question! Why do you need 10 men if the Sanhedrin are there? Surely there's more than a minion there already. If the Sanhedrin are sitting in the gate and all the courts are there, you think there was a shortage of men? He took another 10 men and got them to sit there. Why? Why would he want a second minion? This is all very carefully thought out by the greatest Talmud Chacham in the world at the time. And they sat. Now, Raboisai, my masters, I want you to look at this carefully. I want to say it should be read verse 4, then verse 3. But it's read verse 3, verse 4 by Samuel the prophet. So I'm not going to argue. But I don't think it should be verse 3 and 4. It should be verse 4 and then verse 3. Let's do them and then see why I'm right. And then see why I'm wrong, obviously. Verse 3. Then he said to the Redeemer, Plony Almoni, who's Toiv, the brother of Elimelech, the portion of the field which belonged to our brother Elimelech is being offered for sale by Naomi, which is true because his wife is back, who has returned from the fields of Moab. Why does he need to tell us that? Who cares where she's been? He's dead, and whoever's got it has got to sell it. Do I need to know what bus route they've been on? Why is he telling us this? All right, that was verse 3. Now let's do verse 4, and have in mind that it makes sense to put in verse 4 first. And I thought to inform you to this effect, buy it in the presence of those sitting here and in the presence of the elders of my people. If you wish to redeem, then redeem. This is all very quick, isn't it? No discussion about anything. Just get on with the paperwork. But if you won't redeem, he's now talking to the elders in third person. If he won't redeem, if this bloke sitting here decides not to go through with it, tell me that I may know, for there is no one else to redeem but you and I after you. He responded, I'm willing to redeem. Why doesn't it now say, then he said to him, the portion of the field which belonged to our brother Elimelech is being offered for sale by Naomi. Start mentioning it by name. Now, if you want to say, we'll see later why this is a bit odd. Verse 5. Then Boaz said, by the way, Mr. Plony Almoni, on the day you buy the field from the hand of Naomi and from Ruth, the Moabite. What do you mean, and from Ruth? You're not buying it from Ruth. How can you buy it from Ruth? He said earlier in verse 3, then he said, this portion of the field which belonged to our brother Elimelech is being offered for sale by Naomi, who's come back from Moab. And now in verse 5, he says, oh, who's selling it? Naomi and Rus. First of all, Rus has no link to the field of Elimelech. And why did he mention Rus now and not in verse 3? Is everyone with... In Zoom land, where you're all living, are you all with me? Are you with me? Yeah. Anyway, he says, on the day you buy the field from the hand of... I've got to tell you, I know you're willing to redeem. Little bit of information for you here. When you buy it from the hand of Naomi and from Ruth, the Moabitess. Isn't that an insult? Some woman leaves Nazi Germany and she comes and becomes a Giuress and settles in the land of Israel. And then, oh, by the way, when you want to buy the field from Olga the Nazi, then you have to marry Olga the Nazi. First of all, her name's not Olga anymore. Her name's, I don't know, Hadassah, because she's been, you know, she's from. And two, she's not a Nazi. She's a daughter of Israel living in Jerusalem. Okay? Why are you referring her as the Moabitess? That was considered an insult in the second Perek. You must acquire the wife of the deceased. The deceased was Elimelech. And his wife is Naomi. And we're talking about Rus. Hello? What wife of the deceased? Mahlon? That's who you're talking about? Then why didn't you mention Mahlon? You started this whole discussion talking about Elimelech. You must acquire the wife of the deceased so as to perpetuate the name of the dead over his inheritance. All right, this is not clear. This whole thing is not clear, okay? There's a few things here which just don't add up. In verse 2, we read that he took 10 men. Why did he need another 10 men? What? You got the Sanhedrin there. Now, in verse 3 and verse 4 don't seem to be right in the order they're in. And why was it stressed that Naomi had returned from the fields of Moab to start with? Who cares? She's been here the whole harvest season. It isn't as if that's new news to anyone. The beginning of verse 4 hardly makes sense at all. Boaz couldn't mean that he had it in mind to tell the Redeemer to buy, because we're going to read that he's telling him that he does tell him to buy. He can't just, oh, by the way, I should probably mention, he's telling him to buy it. So he obviously had it in mind to tell him. And in the presence of, why was there any need to make a public gathering? He could have spoken to Tov privately and asked him if he was interested in redeeming the field and marrying Rus. Why has he got to do this huge public event? Also, the word ga'al, redeem, is redundant. In the first half of that verse, in verse 5, it's clear that Boaz is speaking of the second person and he's addressing Tov. Suddenly, it seems to change to the third person when he says, if he does not redeem, as if talking to the Sanhedrin. There's loads of inconsistencies here that obviously are all alluding to certain things, and Shmuel HaNavi is crunching them in to certain lashonos, certain languages that are there to reveal certain bits of data. Also, in verse 5, why was it necessary to report that it was Boaz who was speaking? In the beginning of verse 5, it says over there, Vayomer Boaz. Oh, for goodness sake. It just said in verse 1, Boaz is still doing the talking. Why would we ever think the person who's talking has changed? Is there any linguistic change in any of these verses to say someone else was talking? It's quite clearly understood, Boaz is saying in verse 5, on the day you buy the field from Naomi and Rus, you're going to have to also marry someone. Are we okay with these first 5 verses? And we're going to take this as a block. These 5 come as a block. Clive.
Right. The field originally belonged to Elimelech. Elimelech died. So assuming that, the field would then have gone to his two sons, which one is Machlon. So when Machlon then died, one assumes, therefore, that the field now goes to Ruth.
I did say...
Rus is a descendant, is who's left on Machlon, he's got no children.
Rus's conversion to Judaism for marrying Machlon was not halachically valid.
So therefore, the field still remains with Machlon.
No, no! Machlon's dead!
Yeah, so who's the field belong to?
That's the question! Looks like Naomi, no?
Why Naomi? Because the field has gone past Naomi.
No.
Clive,
let me do it. Clive, let me do it. There's Elimelech. Goes to Machlon or Kilion. Machlon and Kilion are dead, and Rus is by no means halachically a wife. So now it goes to the next closest, which is the wife of Elimelech. That's how it works. The reason you want to say Rus has got anything to do with this at all is only mystically because Machlon is still alive. That's a Kabbalistic concept inside Rus. Machlon's only alive inside Rus. Nobody knows that yet. He's setting the scene. All right. Let's have a look now. So Shmuel Hanavi, who's writing all this, is recording that God wanted this union to happen ASAP. ASAP. First of all, he wanted the word of Boaz to be substantiated and the promise that Naomi made that the man would not rest until the matter is settled to be fulfilled. Naomi said, don't you worry to Rus, he's going to get on the case. And the Kodesh Baruch Hu wanted that to be true. A great tzedekus has said this. We've got to make it happen. In the merit of Naomi, I'll engineer that Boaz gets this through super smooth because she said a bracha that it should be really quick to alleviate Rus, who, by the way, at the end of last week, at the end of the third, but was panicking. Posha was panicking. So much so, Naomi had to calm her down. She's like, calm down, chill out. It's going to be okay. How did she chill her out? She said that no, Boaz is going to get this done super quick. Oh, so Hashem said, right, so we got to get this done super quick because Naomi said so. See what I'm saying? So he's making the whole thing come to fruition very quickly. One of the ways of this happening is Plony Almoni, Tov, walking down the road just when we need him. In fact, this is almost too good to believe. It's a bit like Megillas Esther, where Mordechai just happened to overhear Bigson and Seresh planning to kill the king. Just so happened he knew the language. Just so happened he had connections to report it. Just so happened that got recorded in the book. We're going to need that later in the Esther story. So too, just so happened Tov was walking down the road. As soon as Naomi had finished speaking to Rus, Boaz went up to the gate. And just by chance, Tov walks down the road. This explains why it says, Uvoaz Ola. What does it mean, went up? Do you go up to a gate? Do we learn out the geographical location of the gate was higher in elevation of sea level and therefore he had to go up or something? Are we learning out the actual land, you know, 352 meters above sea level? No, Ola means going up in a hurry. He was running. That's what it means he went up. He's in a rush. And it's not V'ya'al Boaz, but Uvalaz Allah. Boaz was running. And then Boaz saw that Tov just happened to walk by. We didn't have to go get him. Oh, this is all very smoothed out. Now, Boaz promised Rus that he would redeem her if Tov refused to do so. We saw that last week at the end of the third parak. He says, if Tov says no, I'll take you on and you can guarantee that. Now, Rus was panicking. Maybe Boaz is having a change of heart and thinking, just let Tov take her because I'm an old man and this is silly. He also was implying that he would also immediately verify whether Tov was interested in her or not. We've got to find that out. So that's the first thing he's got to bring to Tov's attention. Now, Naomi understood Boaz's intentions from what Rus had told her and put her daughter-in-law at ease last time, calming her down, saying that Boaz indeed is believing of you, being the daughter of Lot and all this business, and he is going to get on the case. You don't have to worry that he's got cold feet and second thoughts and doesn't want you anymore. Now, the question that the Mephoshim ask is as follows, and there's a lot about this, is why didn't Boaz address Tive in private? This has to be one of the key questions. Nobody today would go about it like this. You wouldn't just go to Basedin, talk about it, and then summon Tive by text message to Basedin. You'd go to Tive's house, you'd sit down with him, and you'd say, look, something's come up. You're needed for a mitzvah. That's exactly how it should be done. That is exactly how you would have expected it to have been done. Why did he go to the Sanhedrin, get an extra quorum, and then bring Tive in? It seems so upside down. Boaz thought the Medrash Rus Rabba 7:7, that's chapter 7.7, says Boaz went through a thought process. Amazing. It's amazing when you learn Torah that you hear all these thought processes of our others, of Yaakov and Lavan, and what they're thinking about actually being written down, like as a script, as if you telepathically know. Sometimes Chazal actually brought that in. Hashem said, look, you've got to know this, and I'm going to tell you what people are actually thinking, because you're going to need to know it to learn. It's interesting that. And this is one of the places where we get into Boaz's head. So it's an intimate moment because we're going into a person's psyche. So with that respect, let's delve in. He was thinking, if I go and address Tive, Ploni Almoni, privately, he'll push me off with one of two possible excuses. Either he'll bide for time, which I think I would certainly do. If the Av Sanhedrin came to my house and told me to bar a field and marry a woman, I would go, I'm going to think about it and ask my Rav. Can you just give me like a couple of days? That would seem to be perfect sense, right? Or he's going to agree to redeem the field immediately, but request a month or two before marrying Rus to get a wedding together. Either of those things are very bad news for Boaz. It is possible that being that he is ignorant, he will think that the law which prohibits a descendant of Moab from marrying into the Jewish people includes the women. And indeed, that's what most people thought at the time. It was also to marry a Moabite. But not a Moabitess. It was Boaz that revealed that law, right? But even if he does know, let's say he's a big Talmud Chacham, and he does know that she is permitted to be married, let's say, he may refuse to marry her on the grounds that a Yibum cannot apply to a woman who married her Jewish husband while she was still Gentile. Very good response, which is true, by the way, which we discussed at the beginning of the first parak. Because there'd be no Jewish spirit of Machlon residing in her, which could be passed on to her child to perpetuate the name of the deceased. Therefore, the whole concept of Yibim is useless. Therefore, he might think that in Rus's case, the redemption of a spirit was not applicable and no Yibim was needed. Now, Boaz's inclination in this case led him to do two things immediately. And this member was a tremendous Talmud Chacham. And he knew he had to act fast, quickly, and giving over as little data as possible before the contract was signed. Only what was bare bones necessary. First, he went to the gate where Basedin sat. If he would have informed the Redeemer of the matter in their presence, it would prove very difficult to push Boaz off with an excuse. Oh, I need more time. What more time do you need? You want to speak to a Rav? Here they are. You've got the top judges of Israel. Pick one. And for the rule that a Moabite and not a Moabitess will be made eminently clear by all the Sanhedrin that were sitting there. Nobody's not going to know the halacha there. It would also be made known that Rus was indeed eligible for Yibum. So there's no answer going on with Tov that I need more time to figure this one out. We know the law. We're here. The Sanhedrin are here. Get on with it. What do you want to do? I.e. he's keeping the pressure on Tov at maximum. It's like a business deal where he wants to pressure his business competitor to make a rash decision and give him the advantage. Now, his second thing that he did was to gather a group of 10 of the town's elders on top of the Dayanim that were sitting in the Sanhedrin. We've got a lot of people here who were very choshev. Apart from the Sanhedrin, we're taking Zakenim, more choshev, 10 choshev men on top of that. And why would they be there? Can anyone guess why they would they be there? Ralph? Yeah?
Witness the wedding.
You don't need 10 men to witness a wedding, you only need two.
But you need to get married with, not witness, to be married in front of a
venue. Why?
Because that's what you need to
have. No, no you don't. You can get married without them. I'll get married in front of three men, a Masada Kedushin and two Eidim. But I need a minion to make Sheva Brochus. In order to make Sheva Brochus, I need a minion. So what did he do? If Taiv says, I'm going to marry her, good. So we're going to make a whole chasana right here. Marry her now and we'll make Sheva Brochus. So he gathered them in to add pressure onto Taiv. Just think about what's going on. Think about your being Taiv. You're walking down the road with a bag, right? With, I don't know, an Evening Standard, a donut, a packet of biscuits, I don't know, and a Marmite jar. And you're just walking through town. Suddenly you're whisked off by the greatest hero in Israel, sat in front of the entire Sanhedrin, and 10 elders gather to recite Sheva Brochus at your wedding. What's going on? Whoa, 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 chill. What's happening here? Tive, it's good you're here. You should know you've got to redeem the field from the... Oh, you've got to get married to... Woo, woo, woo. I'm not ready for this.
That woman home to your house to meet your wife.
So the idea is that you got a lot of pressure on. You got pressure on, right? You got a whole load of pressure. Load of pressure. That's what he was doing. So he intended to tell the Redeemer that those people are now waiting to witness the Chasana and to make the Sheva Brochus. This is all too much, right? Tov would see that Boaz meant business. From the get-go, Boaz is only there for legal reasons, and he wants contracts. In the next 20 seconds, he wants signed contracts. There's no pushing this off. We've already got the group together for the Chasana. There's no getting on with it. There's no seeking advice. There's no pushing it off to a later date. If he wants to marry Rus and redeem the field, you've got a minute to make up your mind. Now, Boaz went to the gate with the intent of gathering these elders, but before he could do anything, the Redeemer passed by. And he said to himself as follows. Now, this is going to come where we say, Sura, Shavapeh, come here, don't say anything to anyone, and sit next to me. Why did he say that to Tob? Unbelievably fortuitous moment that happened that he was there, and Boaz needed to capitalize on that Hashgacha Protis. So what Hashem did so far is push Taiv into the mix. So he's got Taiv there, right? That's Hashem's doing, right? And now it's down to Boaz to capitalize on this. He saw what was going on, didn't bat an eyelid, and just got on with the next bit. What's the next bit? Keep your mouth shut, sit here. Why is that necessary? He says, I can't call him here now, as I don't want to speak to him until I've gathered the minion together for the Sheva Brochus. On the other hand, they're going to say, what are we here for? And I don't want him to ask them, why are we here? They'll say, oh, because you're getting married. He'll run off. And he'll run down the street. And I'll lose Taiv. Oh no! What's going to be that I can't? All my advantage will be lost. So I need Taiv to be on set. I need him to sit quietly. I need him not to talk to these 10 elders to figure out. I don't want him to know anything until I tell him. I don't want him to put two and two together. I want him to play absolutely in the dark. I'll let him know the information as and when I'll tell him. You see what's going on there? He's setting the stage to keep Taiv as dumb as possible as to what's going on. Because if he gets wind of this, he'll flip. And rightly so, he'll run. So he wanted to say, Do you wonder why I don't talk to you right away? I've got to talk to someone else. Don't be concerned that I'm telling you to sit all the way with the Sanhedrin, even though you're not a particularly knowledgeable person and you don't deserve to sit amongst the Sanhedrin. You come and sit next to the Dionym of the Sanhedrin and just keep quiet. And he's like, well, I'm not dressed for this. Do you know what I mean? I'm like, I would have put on my Shabbos Begodim and I didn't know this. Just sit down. Because I'm not telling you to sit with them, but rather surah, turn away from their place and shove a pot. Sit here with me. I want you to sit right next to me. I'm going to hold your hand and something important is about to happen with you. And so keep quiet and I'll lead the way. That's what Boaz wants to do. Remember, Boaz was a Gilgal of Yehuda. He was a very potent, powerful individual. So he called him Pliny Alamoni. Only place we see this really in scripture where a person is called that. His name was Tov. Everyone knew who he was. He just called him another, you know, which, you know, what's that in not the accused, but in court, people have names, you know, the jury, the accused, the witness. They lose their identity. They become a perfunctory. And those words signify that he should say, stay quiet and anonymous. You sit here, you're just Pliny Alamoni. You sit here, you keep quiet, and your role is yet to be known about. Only later did Boaz divulge the reason for calling him over. And at that moment, he had to wait until all the 10 men had been gathered from the elders to make sure they had a full minyan for the Sheva Brachos. Now, the Redeemer, this Tov, was one of whom Boaz had spoken, i.e. Tov. However, he's not identified by his real name, hinting to the fact that he had something secret to tell him. I'm not going to tell you your full name. He's Pliny Alamoni. I want to tell you something that only you should know about. Psst. But he must first wait a while before Boaz can reveal the secret that you're Tov and something special is going to happen with you. Then he gathered the 10 men together and told them also to sit down, indicating that right now they're not needed. That's why I said you sit here. I don't need you yet. I'm only going to need you for the Sheva Brachos. So the stage is being set by Boaz with the Sanhedrin, 10 elders and Tov, and essentially everyone is playing second fiddle to Boaz. Boaz is the conductor orchestrating everything, and he's telling everybody what to do, and everyone's sitting about waiting for Boaz to give them orders. Can you see what's going on here? He's really conducting this affair. When everything was ready and all the elders was there, Boaz then said, the portion of the field which belonged to, etc. Now in chapter 3, verse 13. It says, stay the night, then in the morning, if he'll redeem you, fine, let him redeem. But if he doesn't want you, then I'll redeem you. Chai Hashem, lie down until morning. Don't you worry, I'll organize it. Now, over there, he was explaining why the term redemption applied both to the field and to Rus. Regarding the field, Boaz said, the portion of the field which belongs is being put up for sale by Naomi, who has returned from the fields of Moab. The meaning of what Boaz is saying here is since she has returned from Moab some time ago, it will be proper to redeem the field without any further delay. It's been long enough sitting in escrow. Naomi is now back. She's been back a while and nothing's going on with this plot. Let's organize it. We need to act now before we lose sight of this legal matter. Now, the Redeemer, whoever he may be, in this case, Tov Pliny Alamoni, may well have had cause to protest in the way that he was publicly embarrassed in front of the Sanhedrin and the elders sitting there with a, you know, with his coat on and stuff like that. Do you know what I mean? He is going to be like, you know, what's happening? And he also could have turned round to Bowers and said, why don't you speak to me in private? Why are you making this such a big public affair? Like, we're family members. Couldn't you just... Why are you doing this to me? You're embarrassing me publicly. I don't know what's going on here. Now, Boaz himself explained the problem to this. In verse 4 that we read earlier, which seemed to come before verse 3, if only the field required redemption, then I would say to myself that when Naomi returns from Moab, I'll tell you about it privately. If it's just a case of money coming into the family, I'd have knocked on your door and told you about the money. But there's another matter which has come up here, which isn't just about the field. And that requires it to be spoken of in the presence of the entire Sanhedrin and all the elders, because a mitzvah of Yibum has come to light. And we didn't know about that. If it was just about money in the family, I'd have knocked on your door, you'd have come, taken the field, and it'd be done and dusted. But now we have a mitzvah of Yibum, which has to be done in Beis Din. Beis Din have to organise Yibum or Chalitza. Either which way, you've got to organise it. Now, you can't claim that even a Moabitess is forbidden to marry a Jew, because the members of Sanhedrin are here, and they themselves are telling you, you can marry Rus, who is a Moabitess. That's why he called her a Moabitess. Why is it not rude to call her a Nazi? Why is that not rude? Why, that was an insult in the second parak. Answer is like this. There's a legal challenge that Tov would have had, saying, I can't do this, she's a Moabitess. And you can't marry a Moabitess. Answer is, actually, yes, he can. A Moabitess you can marry. A Moabite you can't. And that's legally important to be brought up at this point, because there's a marriage about to happen. A Mazel Tov, you're about to get married to Rus. A Moabitess, right? And so much so, I've brought these people together. Now he tells Tov what the elders are there for. Also telling the elders what they're there for. That they're there for the Sheva Brochus. And there's no time to defer the proceedings. They're already sitting here waiting. Let's get a cup of wine. We'll draw up a wedding contract. Let them bench and you can go home with a new wife. By 2:30 today, you'll be home with a new wife. Okay, look at done and dusted. This is all happening instantaneously. Why are you doing this publicly? Yibum. Yibum is forcing... This is not standard redemption of land, which is very perfunctory. I could have done that personally. This is a big new mitzvah. The mitzvah of Yibum. It's right. The biggest tzaddikim in town make a sheva brachas. That would make sense if you're going to do a Yibum. All the top rabbonim would want to be able to have a chalik in that, surely. Very interesting. Now, Boaz told Tov, don't worry. Tell me whether you want to get the field and Rus, so that I may know if God has condoned this redemption. I must know now, because there is no one to redeem but you and me after you. I'm involved in this, because if you say no, you are putting me in the halachic position that I have to take this on. Do you see what he's saying here? Why did I bring you here? Why is it so necessary for you to do this publicly? First of all, you've got to do a massive mitzvah of Yibum. Second of all, if you're not going to do it, I have to do it. Because there's no one else but you and me. So that's why we are here publicly doing this. It becomes very, very important. I'm not embarrassing you. This is an incredibly important mitzvah. And if you're not doing it right now, we have to do it. A mitzvah mudaraisa has popped up. Yibum has to be done. And it's either you or me. So he's giving Tov the chance of first refusal, which is the right thing he's got to do, because Tov is in place for first refusal, being a closer relative than Boaz. Note what immediately Tov says. I'll redeem. I'll take it. Fine. I'll redeem. Tov was only referring to the field. I'll take the land. If there's land coming up, I'm very happy to take an extra portion of land. But I'm not referring to Rus. I have no interest in marrying Rus. Now, it may be that he wanted the field immediately, but wanted, as we said earlier, time to think about Rus. Rubber 7-7 says he wanted time to think about this whole Rus business. He wasn't so into that. But he wanted the field, the money. I'll take the money right now. Lottery winnings, I'll take. You know what I mean? He might have had doubts about the Maccabi testing. And he might have had that doubt about Machlon being Jewish, his wife being Jewish or not, and therefore whether or not Yibam happened. Boaz took all that account and said, we're right here. You got any questions, you ask the Sanhedrin. There's no time. You have to make a decision. If you want the field, you've got to take the field. And I've got news for you. You've got to take Rus. And that's why I'm here. Because if you say no, then that mitzvah devolves onto me. So I'm only too happy you do this, it seems. He's saying, I'm only too happy because then I'm off the hook. Do you understand? And I'm an old man. What would I want with Rus? So the way that this is being sold in public is very much tithe biased. And if you were an elder sitting there, think, oh, yeah, that makes sense. Tithe is, you know, let tithe get. He's a, and if tithe says no, then it'll devolve to such an aged tzaddik as Boaz, if need be. Okay, then he'll do it. That puts Boaz in a very good position to legitimately marry Rus this way. Because it makes sense. And everyone says, oh, yeah, well, okay, well, Tov didn't want it. And okay, well, there's no one else, so he's got to do it. This is very good for Boaz, depending upon what Tov says next. Now, it's important that he says that if you look at verse 5, very important hidden meaning. On the day that you buy the field from the hand of Naomi and from Rus the Moabitess, you must acquire the wife of the deceased so as to perpetuate the name. He's making very clear who we're talking about now. It's Rus. The wife of the deceased is Machlon. Rus is the wife of the deceased. So Machlon is the deceased. We're not talking about Elimelech. We're talking about Machlon. And he's saying, don't think Machlon doesn't reside in her and therefore there's no Yibam here. She's fully Jewish and therefore she's a receptacle for Machlon's spirit, which means the mitzvah of Yibam is chal upon her. If you doubt me, ask the Sanhedrin who sit here. So there's no doubt this is a real Yibam process. Don't tell me it doesn't apply to her. It's happening. Now, the question you're probably going to ask at this stage is, what's the rush? Why did he go the very next morning to do this? He could have thought this out over a week or two, and it wouldn't have made much of a difference. Why is all this happening overnight? And why is he pressuring Tithe into a tight situation? It even says, on the day you buy the field, you must do the Yibam. That's not necessarily true. I'll be halachic, he doesn't have to do. If he has to take the field, he can take the field and he can take the Yibam another day. No, on the day you buy the field, you have to take the woman. This has all got to happen immediately. You must acquire Rus on the same day that you buy the field because I want to have 10 men available in case the Sanhedrin is taken up with other duties and doesn't have time to attend the matter. I've taken all this time getting everyone together. I'm not going to get everyone back. It's a complicated situation. Let's strike while the iron's hot. He's artificially ramping up the pressure. He didn't need to do this. He's telling Tov, look what's happening here. We've got the Sanhedrin, Baruch Hashem. We've got the Zakenim. We've got the elders. They're waiting for you to, you know, to marry her and make Sheva Brachos and make Ksuba. Let's get on with it. This is a once in a lifetime opportunity. I'm never going to get everyone back here in the same time. That's why you can understand why the verse begins with the words, then Boaz said. In verse 5, it starts, then Boaz said. And we said, who else would be saying it? Who else would be talking in the dialogue? The emphasis that Shmuel HaNavi is making on verse 5 is that Boaz was determined to keep his promise that he'll do it the very next day. He told Rus, you stay here in 3:13. He told Rus, you stay the night. I'll organise this tomorrow. Naomi has said he's going to make good on that promise. See, he's made a promise. I'm going to organise it ASAP, which means I'm going to push Tithe into a within 24 hour from me telling you this, the whole thing will be organised. Now, it's very fortunate for Boaz that not a single voice of protest was raised against the proposition. Now, I said, hold on, what's going on here? You got the Zakayim in there. Is this really? But what about the fact that when she married Machlon, she wasn't Jewish? The Redeemer, who is Toiv, who felt very embarrassed by all this public attention immediately, kept quiet and relinquished his rights of redemption in favour of Boaz. He just sat there going, oh, whatever. You know, I want to go home. If you don't mind, I'd like to go home now. Boaz planned that. He had planned the intensity of the situation so that Ruth could be rewarded for all the embarrassment she suffered by having to uncover Boaz's feet for the sake of Shemaim. She has undergone great embarrassment, and he promised her that he will do as she asked quickly in 3:11. And by this he meant marriage. So he was literally, to a certain extent, he had already kind of got engaged to her verbally by saying, I'll marry you. He said yes to her. And that explains what it means that he's hinting to the fact that it's considered as if Boaz had already acquired Rus. He's going to get it done and he'll push Toiv out of the way. Look at verse 6. The Redeemer, just the Redeemer. Vayoma Hagoyel, said the Redeemer. Not Toiv, not Ploni Almoni. Just the Redeemer. I cannot redeem it for myself, for I might imperil my heritage. You redeem my redemption for yourself. I cannot redeem it. Double negative. He said at the beginning, I can't redeem it for myself. Lo yuchal agovli. And then he says at the end, lo yuchal agovli. It's a double loshen, you see that? Now the two pronunciations of li for myself and lecha for you seem completely redundant. What do those words signify? Also, it's not made clear why marrying Rus would in any way imperil his heritage. How's his reason for not marrying Rus in any way real? What's going to go wrong? If he gets another field and marries another woman, what's the problem? So there's a Gemara in Yevamos, Mem Ches Amud Beis. That's 48b. And then it says there, very interestingly, Rabbi Chanina, the son of Rabbi Gamliel, says, why do converts suffer oppression in this world? Why do converts have a hard time? And the answer he gives is because they don't keep the seven Noahide laws. The reason a convert is having a hard time because he's not keeping Shefa Mrs. Malay Noach. Does that make any sense? What's going on here? What do we see from this? We see from his words that proselytes go through many trials and tribulations following their conversion. Boaz was informing the Redeemer that Naomi, who had returned from Moab, was selling the field. He said that in 4:3, the beginning of today. He said that. That clause seems completely superfluous, doesn't it? Boaz wanted to convey to Toiv that Naomi was bitter over the fact that all of her sons had married Gentile women. And she had gone to Moab full. Remember we discussed that with all family members. But God had returned to her not only empty handed, but without a husband, without children. And she lost. She had a miscarriage as well. She's bitter because of the Moabites. He's alluding. It's because she went to Moab. She should never have gone to Moab, which is what we said in chapter 1. That's the reason Elimelech died. What are you doing? Abandoning Klal Yisrael. Boaz was stressing that fact that Naomi had come back from Moab, of all places, to detract from Rus's appeal to say this girl is no good. The reason Machlon died was because he married this woman, which is true. That's true. That's true. The reason Chilion died is because he married Orpah. That's true. That's true. Partly, certainly. So he's saying it's a bit of a Nebuch situation. Naomi, or rich, wonderful woman, has come back a destitute pauper because she went to Moab and it was all bad and Hashem has afflicted her. And she's come back with the very same girl that's caused all the problems. Which is, to a certain extent, if you see it that way, is within the realm of truth, isn't it? That's true. So he doesn't want to, like, sell Rus to Tive, you know? So Boaz is making it clear that she had returned from Moab alone, without any family member, without any possessions, and taking this Gioris in tow from Moab. Why would Naomi's financial situation concern Tive about getting a field? If someone offered you a tract of land, what would you care about that the previous owner was on hard times? The likelihood is that he's only selling it to get out of hard times. It's an opportunity for you. If someone's selling a house for cheap, it's probably because they need the money. Why would you care they need the money? Who cares why they need the money? I've got a good house for cheap. Do you understand the issue here? Who cares that he's... Now, there was no reason why he should care. Ostensibly, who cares that Naomi's on hard times? Her daughters-in-law weren't even Jewish at the time that they married her sons. But he might have been concerned about proselytes because they're much oppressed. This girl's had a hard time. She's had a hard, which is true. Ruth has had a hard time so far. From the moment she left Moab, or even before when she lost her husband, she's had a hard time. She's certainly been down on her luck. And maybe, superstitious, maybe anyone marrying such a woman would be likely to suffer a similar fate and be destined for a life of poverty. Indeed, Rabbi Akiva says, if you want to make some money, find people who are successful and go into business with them, because maybe their mazal will rub off on you. That's an interesting idea. Don't hang out with someone who's down on his luck. Don't invest with a loser. That's Rabbi Akiva. Now, Tov is being sold Rus as a loser. Ah, she's a loser, a barefoot proselytess who's only had hard times. You got to take her in as a Nebuch. He's worried if I take her as a Nebuch, she'll ruin my life. Just like Naomi has only had bitterness knowing this woman, I'll also only have bitterness knowing this woman. That's why he's scared if he redeems the field and the field comes bundled a lot. Think about, listen to me, how's he selling this? If you, look, he really, this is how Tov is thinking. Think about the buyer. Think about the purchaser. He's being sold a piece of land. No wonder Boaz, think about how he's thinking. No wonder Boaz wants me to redeem the field, because he knows that the field comes with Rus. And he's got no interest in Rus because he doesn't want to get down on his luck. He's a rich man. He doesn't want to lose his money. So he wants to palm it off on me, so I'll lose my money, and he's stepping me. Do you see what he's thinking? No wonder he only mentioned Rus Baderech Agav, because that's kind of that's the sour part of the deal. Of course, everyone wants the money and a piece of land. What's the catch? Well, catch is Rus. It's a bit of a problem. Yeah, no wonder you're getting everyone here to marry me off quickly to this woman without me having 2 minutes to think about it, so that you could palm Rus off, so you don't have to do it, so you don't have to marry her, so you don't lose any money. I'm not doing this. You can do it. You want it, you can take a Hatzlacha Rabba, Mazel Tov. Do you understand? The whole thing is a reverse psychology. It's all reverse psychology. Boaz couldn't give a monkeys about the field. He only wants Rus. He's selling the field, saying Rus is a bit of a problem. So Tov will think he only wants the field. He wants the money, but he doesn't want Rus. So he'll give the problem to me. Do you see how he's selling it? All this is from... That's what we're reading out from these verses. Psh, amazing, no? So now Tove is really... Tove thinks he's clever. Tove thinks, I get you. I get you. You're trying to sell me a dud. You know what? Do I have halachic ability to say no to this? Yeah, well, then I'll have to... All right, so I'm saying no. You do it. And he thinks he's got himself out of shtuch. Not knowing that he's lost the best part of the deal, which is... Ruth doesn't want him either, by the way. Ruth has chosen Boaz from the get-go, which is not something you would have expected a woman of her age to have done. Now we can understand why Tov told Boaz, I cannot redeem it for myself. He says, I can't take Ruth as a wife for me. She's a Georess, and anything she's associating with is doomed. And I would be jeopardising my entire heritage if I married her. She'll make me have bad luck and I'll lose what money I've got. So you know what? I'm not interested. That's why the extra S comes to teach us. Atar S Golossi. This comes to teach us that he would have acquired from the house of Elimelech. And that would have been imperiled because it would have been sold off as well. He says, look, I'm from the house of Elimelech, right? My brother's Elimelech. And out of respect to my brother Elimelech, if I take Rus in with a field and she imperils my heritage, it's not just me, Tive, that's going to lose out. The estate of the saintly Elimelech will be damaged by Rus's presence. So out of covered for Elimelech's estate, I won't do that to him. I'm not doing this. So you could reread this verse as saying, you redeem it for yourself. That which concerns you personally, i.e. Rus, you redeem for yourself. Because I see it's in your interest is really on her. Tove says, I know what you're really doing here. It's all about the girl, isn't it? You want to palm the girl off. And you're sweetening the deal with a field. So I'm relinquishing all my rights. You take the girl and the field along with it. Not the field and the girl. Now I chop shot, says Tive. You don't want to sell me the... This is not good news for me with the field. This is bad news for me and my entire heritage. I've got to marry this woman and lose everything. Like Naomi did. Like Machlon did. Like Chilion did. Like Elimelech did. And now you want to palm that off to me. You know what? I'm relinquishing my rights. In front of the whole Sanhedrin and all the elders, I'm letting it go. Oh. Now this from now Tove thinks he's done a great... You were going to get me. You, Boaz, were trying to trick me. And beyond tricking, I'm double daring you. I'm tricking you back. You want this so much you can keep it. No. That makes me really clever. And Boaz is kind of sheepish about it. He's like, okay. So without saying anything, he took off his shoe. The next verse and said, all right. Okay, so I have to do it. Yeah, you have to do it. You do it. In front of the Redeemers, there's no argument. This is how we sold it out. Let's just do verse 7. I know we're a little bit over time. But we'll just do one more, and then that kind of completes this bit of the section. Then we'll stop, okay? Look at verse 7. There's quite a lot to discuss on verse 7, actually. Zeus lefonim b'Yisrael. This was what was done in the countenance, in the faces, in the presence of Israel at the time, in former times, concerning redemption and exchange. So as to confirm every transaction, a man would remove his shoe and hand it to his fellow. That was the process of ratification in Israel. That's how it was done. Verse 8, let's just do verse 8. The Redeemer, Tov, Ploni Almoni, said to Boaz in front of the Sanhedrin and in front of all the elders, acquire it for yourself. It, meaning the field, wrapped up with Rus. And he took off his shoe. Who's taking off their shoe? There's a lot to discuss here about shoes. Let's just talk about these two verses, then we'll call it quits. So we'll go over about a couple of minutes, okay? Now, in verse 7 that we just read, the opening phrase seems to indicate that the practice was merely a custom. While if you look at the closing phrase, it implies it was law. Isn't that interesting? Look at that. Look at the opening of verse 7. There was the minhag. There was what was done at the time of the people in Israel. This is what they used to do. Look at the end of verse. This is the process of ratification in Israel. Sounds like we're talking about high old canon by the end of the verse. And it's just a minhag at the beginning of the verse. Do you see how that... Does everyone see that? The verse in verse 7 seems to be talking about the strength of taking off the shoe totally differently in the beginning to the end. Why? At first, it only used to be a custom to do this. Indeed, it was. It was customary. But it later became law. Shmuel Hanavi is telling us, from here, we learn out the law. In those days, it was a custom. Shmuel is saying, because they did it then, we're making it law. You got to do it. It was made law, eventually into the process. Alternatively, you could read this differently. Shmuel Hanavi, this is again from Rus Rabba 7:7, said to ratify a deal based on redemption and exchange, the custom was to have one of the traders remove his shoe and hand it to the other trader. That's Boaz to Tov or Tov to Boaz. We're not clear. Now that means confirming a deal in those days was struck really only applied to redemption and exchanges. With this shoe business. Now the kinsman, this is Tov, in his ignorance, made a mistake. And he assumed that the widow of a dead man could be acquired using the same method. It can't. You want to acquire the widow of a dead man, you have to marry her with full nuptial ceremony. You can't just remove a shoe and chop a woman. Just like, you know, buy a woman by slipping off a sandal. That's why Boaz told that to acquire Rus by removing his shoe, he realized that when he was told that, he realized that Tov had made a mistake. Tov said, acquire it for yourself, including the woman. Boaz now knew that Tov didn't know what he was on about. Why didn't Boaz jump in and correct him and say, no. Slipping off the shoe is only for the field. The woman is a whole different business. He didn't say anything. After removing his shoe, he confirmed that he had acquired everything that belonged to Elimelech and his family, but he did not include Rus in the deal, as a woman cannot be married by means of exchange. Only later in verse 10, which please God we'll get to, are we told that Rus was acquired, indicating that she wasn't included in the previous deal? Not that Tov understood this. Now, before I leave you, I've got to give you the whole halacha about the shoes. Let's just talk about the shoes for a moment. There's a Gemara in Bava Metzia, Mem Zayin Omad Aleph, that's 47a, and says there's two Amoraim that have a machloka. Amoraim are sages of the Talmud, who discussed the talking of the sages of the Mishnah, who were Tanoim. So the Amoraim came after the Tanoim. And the two Amoraim that we're talking about is Rav and Levi. Rav and Levi had an argument. Rav was of the opinion that the shoe must belong to the one who is acquiring the object. So if Boaz is acquiring the field, according to Rav, it's got to be Boaz's shoe. You with me on this? Levi, who was arguing with Rav in the Gemara, holds that the shoe must belong to the giver or the seller. Now, in our verse, it's not exactly clear whose shoe is used and by whom. Who took off the shoe and who gave it to who? It's possible there was a difference of opinion between the Tov party and the Boaz party as to who should take off their shoes. Maybe one holds by Rav, one holds by Levi. Who should take off our shoe? Who has to give it? And it could be there's a disagreement, just like there's a difference between Rav and Boaz. There's not clear who has to do this. Now let's look at this. It said at the beginning of verse 7, this was the custom prevalent in Israel. It's a minhag, right? In a case involving redemption or exchange, no one particular person about whom the object belonged to had to differentiate between giver and taker with a shoe. Anyone can use any shoe. Any one of the two parties, the person redeeming the field or the person who wants to redeem the field and get it, anyone could take off his shoe and hand it to the other. Whether he's the giver or the receiver, it makes no difference. It was customary. Now, when the object that is used belonged to the receiver, then the deal is taking place according to Rav. That would mean Boaz is taking off his, it's his shoe. And that would be the deal according to Rav. If it belonged to the giver, Tive, then it was done in accordance with Levi's view. But it didn't remain custom. Shmuel is telling us that the law was actually established firmly later in Israel. And the next verse describes the process of the exchange. It says, the Redeemer then said to Boaz, acquire it for yourself. Tive handed an object of his own, his shoe, to Boaz, because he believed that the law was in accordance with Levi. Boaz, however, was maintaining that Rav's opinion is what was law, since he took off his shoe and he gave it to Tive. So there's a shoe transfer over here. That's why it says in verse 7 that the law was laid down by Boaz. Because Boaz was a great Talmid Chacham and the leader of Israel, we paskin like him, which means we rule according to Rav. That was then the process of rectification in Israel. The opening words was describing the custom. There was Levi and Rav, as it was, opinion. They didn't know. You could do whatever you wanted. Because Boaz sealed the deal and Boaz held like Rav that it's got to be my shoe because I'm the one redeeming, that becomes the law. So the law is now, if you're going to remove a shoe, it's got to be the person who is indeed redeeming it. That's why the verse is structured like that. In the beginning, it was a bit of a free-for-all. But because in this particular case, you had an ignoramus versus the greatest Talmid Chacham in Israel, and the greatest Talmid Chacham in Israel took off his shoe, and the ignoramus took off his shoe, we're going to pass him with the Talmid Chacham and know from here on in that whatever Boaz was doing, that's the law. So this pasuk is telling you, prior to Boaz doing this, it was all customary. Once Boaz did this, he set the rule as to who has to do the transfer. And the law as we know it is learned from this pasuk. All that from talking about the shoes. But I say thank you so much for taking of your time for being here. What we're going to do, Be'ez Hashem, next time is look at verses 10, 9, 10, 11 as a block. And because that's all the Yibam stuff. And then 11 and 12 as a separate block. So there's 9, 10, 11. Sorry, there's, 9, 10 and 11. And then just 11 and 12. That means we're going to look at verse 11 twice as a separate block. Because then we're actually going to see how this Yibum stuff gets going. I really look forward to seeing you next time. And it's wonderful to see you. I hope you have a wonderful week and a wonderful Shabbat.